Welcome to Voicing Our Values, a series of podcasts about progressive message framing. This is the 14th segment called How to Talk About Wages and Benefits. I'm Bernie Horn, the Senior Director for Policy and Communications at the Public Leadership Institute, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that seeks to help progressive lawmakers and advocates, particularly at the state and local levels of government. Please take some time to look around our website, www.publicleadershipinstitute.org. In addition to the Voicing Our Values messaging handbook, you'll find the Progressive Agenda, which contains hundreds of policy ideas and more than 150 model bills, our handbook for policy advocates called Preparing to Win, and much more. Our last podcast, number 13, explained how to talk about voting and elections in a way to get around the problem of confirmation bias that we explained in podcast number 1. To persuade, you need to understand your audience's preconceptions and where you share common ground. To avoid triggering negative emotional reactions and confirmation bias, you must start from a point of agreement and provide voters with a bridge from their preconceptions to your solutions. Along the way, show that your policies are consistent with values that they already hold dear and explain how they benefit. All this is designed to remind your listeners over and over again that you are on their side. The question now is, how do we apply this when talking about wages and benefits? As we told you in podcast 2, the first rule of persuasion is to begin any argument in agreement with your audience. How do you do that when talking about wages and benefits? You could say something like this: America should be a land of opportunity where hard work is rewarded. Now, if you say that, I suggest that everyone will agree with you. You'll start in agreement. After we start in agreement, then we use values. What are our progressive values when it comes to wages and benefits? How about opportunity, equal opportunity, fairness, fair share, justice, level playing field? When you use those words, you're in agreement with your audience. And so, what is our vision for policy about wages and benefits? It's something like this. Our economic system is unfair because the rules are rigged to favor the rich and powerful over the middle class and working families. We need to ensure that lower-level jobs provide at least a living wage and that middle-class jobs support a middle-class standard of living. Four policies are fundamental. Laws that, 1, set a floor on wages for different types of work, 2, guarantee a minimum set of job benefits, 3, ensure that hiring and retention processes are fair, and 4, protect the right to collective bargaining in order to secure for workers a fair share of the profits. Now let's dive into some language. In general, progressives often focus on creating jobs, but in today's economy, Americans are more interested in better wages and benefits. About 70% want a substantial increase in the minimum wage, 80% favor paid leave for parents who take care of young children, and 85% support paid sick leave for workers who are ill. So, audiences are prepared to agree with progressive narratives about improving wages and benefits. For example, a narrative like this: for too many hardworking Americans, wages and benefits haven't kept up with the real costs of living. And because it is the middle class and working families who drive our economy, the lack of decent wages and benefits hurts everyone. So we must rewrite some economic rules so that workers get a fair deal by, and then explain your legislation. This policy helps build an economy that works for everyone, not just the wealthy few. Now, why do we suggest that language? First, it starts in agreement. Just about every persuadable voter understands or has a gut feeling that they've been losing ground over time. Second, it's based on the value of fairness, which addresses everyone. You can use a range of values associated with equal opportunity, such as fair share, fair deal, level playing field, and many others. Third, it explicitly explains that the lack of good wages hurts everyone. It tells people that they will benefit even if that benefit is indirect. Fourth, it calls the beneficiaries of this policy hardworking. Every message about wages and benefits should explicitly say that the beneficiaries are hardworking. And finally, it explicitly indicts the rich and powerful, which right now is very good politics. Polling shows that it's very important to add not just the wealthy or not just the rich. So let's use a particular example to flesh out this area of messaging. Let's talk about increasing the minimum wage. As you probably know, the federal minimum wage is only $7.25 an hour. About 75% of voters support raising it to at least $10 an hour. About two-thirds support raising it to $12 an hour, and about 55% would gradually raise it to $15 an hour. So this cause is both great politics and great policy. Every progressive should embrace this issue. And there really are very few states where this would not work. Generally, persuadable voters earn more than the minimum wage. So you need to show them that they indirectly benefit from an increase in the minimum wage and that the people receiving direct benefits are deserving. Here is a sample narrative. America must be a land of opportunity where hard work is rewarded. But today's minimum wage is not enough for a family to make ends meet. Raising the minimum wage puts money in the pockets of hardworking Americans who will spend it on things they need. This in turn generates business for our economy and eases the burden on taxpayer-funded services. So it's a win-win. Raising the minimum wage helps build an economy that works for everyone, not just the rich. So why that narrative? Many progressive advocates want to start with facts and figures. Please don't. Most Americans are already on your side, so take this opportunity to show that the policy they already understand and favor is based on your progressive values. Here are the key arguments to make. An increased minimum wage, first, rewards work, right? Raising the minimum wage shows that we value hard work over welfare. Second, it boosts the economy. The public already believes this, so say it, and say it loudly. Third, that it saves taxpayer money. If families make a decent wage, it diminishes the need for government benefits, obviously. And fourth, it promotes fairness. People remain quite angry about CEO pay and the unfairness that pervades today's economy. Workers deserve their fair share. There's also language to avoid. Don't make minimum wage about alleviating poverty. The reality is that persuadable voters will default to negative stereotypes they hold about people in poverty. They shouldn't have taken such a lousy job. They should have gotten a better education. They're lazy or unreliable or did something that got themselves in this situation. So it's particularly important to frame the minimum wage as good for the entire economy, for all of us. Don't say language like we need to help the poor or the working poor. Don't say poor. What you want to say is an economy that works for all of us, an honest day's pay for an honest day's work. Why this language? Again, by all means, you can say that in the wealthiest nation on earth, no one who works full-time should have to live in poverty. Yes, you could say that. And it would be hard to testify on the minimum wage before a legislative committee without mentioning the federal poverty level. You'd have to. But when you're talking to average Americans, average voters, avoid referring to beneficiaries in ways that evokes the welfare frame that's in their heads. So here is a common right-wing argument, and let's talk about how to answer it. The argument would be the free market takes care of wages. So here's your answer. In America, everyone who works hard should be able to live a decent life. Currently, minimum wage workers earn less than $300 a week. No matter where you live, that's just not enough to make ends meet. This is about people who work hard every day so their employer can make a profit. At the very least, they deserve to be able to pay their bills. Now, what are the numbers underlying that? An individual who works full-time at the current $7.25 federal minimum wage earns about $14,500 a year, which is below the poverty level for a family of two or more. Congress last raised the minimum wage in 2007, 12 years ago. The minimum wage in 1968, if adjusted for inflation, would be $11 or $12 today, making it perfectly reasonable and modest by historical standards to raise the minimum wage considerably today. Here's another right-wing argument. The minimum wage affects only a tiny percentage of workers. And here's your argument in return. Every hardworking American should get a decent wage. In fact, a minimum wage increase to whatever the number is, $10 or $12 or $15 an hour, would improve pay for about 1 in 4 private sector workers across the country. It would benefit everyone else by putting money back into local businesses and getting our economy moving again. So, again, why do we say this? It would boost the wages of 17 or 18 or 20 million people nationwide. And because of the spillover effect, economists show that you don't have to be making the minimum wage and you don't have to be making below the new minimum wage in order to benefit. If the minimum wage increased to $12, for example, people who currently are making between 12 and 13 are also going to get an increase. Here's another argument, another right-wing argument. Raising the minimum wage will cost jobs, a common argument. Here is an answer. Hardworking people deserve a wage that pays the rent and puts food on the table. A minimum wage increase would help do that without reducing the number of jobs available. Over the past few years, many states have increased their minimum wage far more than neighboring states, and economists have been able to study what happens to jobs in the state with higher wages in comparison with its neighbors. According to 7 Nobel Prize winning economists, quote, increases in the minimum wage had little or no negative effect on the employment of minimum wage workers, unquote. Here's another right-wing argument. Tipped workers are already paid enough. They don't need a raise. The answer is, tipped employees, like waiters, work hard for their pay. And yet, incredibly, the minimum wage for tip workers is only $2.13 an hour and has not increased since 1991. No wonder the poverty rate for tipped workers is more than double the rate for other employees. Raising the tipped minimum wage does not hurt restaurants. In fact, 7 states, including California, Minnesota, Nevada, and Washington, have the same minimum wage for tipped workers as they have for everyone else. And the restaurants in those states are thriving. Everyone who works hard deserves to make a decent living. So please note that all of our narratives and our proposed answers to arguments follow 3 simple rules. 1, begin in agreement. 2, use values. And three, show how the listeners benefit. Okay? For more specific ways to answer right-wing arguments, please refer to our book, Voicing Our Values, available on the PLI website. In future podcasts, we'll show how to use our basic rules of persuasion to debate many other issues. In the meantime, do us a favor and recommend the Voicing Our Values series of podcasts to your friends. Best to you.